Hello, people of Extraordinarily Fresh. This is your commish Skip, and welcome to the Week 13 Extraordinarily Fresh podcast.
Week 13.
Yeah, I'm here with Shane. Say hello to the people.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, good something. Anything's better than my record.
Well, hopefully you'll rectify that this week, because this week is, as you know, Rivalry Week. Week 13.
Oh, the hate will brew and it will stew, but man, it's bragging rights. And quite frankly, this is going to be probably one of the most anticipated rivalry weeks because it has playoff implications attached. When was the last time we had that?
Wow. It seems like we have that every year, but this year is particularly good. We got a few playoff teams that have already clinched spots, but then we've got a few who are looking for those last spots. And particularly, we've got a race for number six, and we'll talk about that as the show goes along. Going forward, how did Week 12 treat you? I know you had some hard times in Week 12, but did you see anything that was beneficial for you?
Surprisingly, I guess, you know, maybe I should change my name to Britney Spears because, oops, I did it again. I think Hunter Henry has finally taken over. I mean, he's not putting up gaudy numbers, but if you look at what he's done, and his touchdown was really the only thing that kind of saved his numbers. But, you know, he's been pretty consistent across the board. My team is probably the most inconsistent across the board. Because there are weeks when Julio puts up great numbers, there are weeks when he doesn't. Terrell Pryor and Terrell Williams, you know, they both had 20, 22 and 21 respectively for me. It's one of those things where it's like week in, week out, you put up decent numbers, but everyone else is just putting up better numbers, you know? So, I think for me, I think the receiving core that I have is one that is definitely interesting and one to potentially hold on to for sure. Other than that, I mean, the rest of my team is kind of like my record, you know, very mediocre at best. But, you know, things happen. You don't always get the results you want. That's why we they play the game every Sunday, and that's why we draft players that we think are going to be high impact.
Yeah, definitely. I feel your pain. I mean, I was going into last week, of course, you know, on last week's podcast, we talked about our juggernaut of a matchup between me and Ish. And, you know, it looked like I was going to be the favorite coming out of that. And, man, I mean, Cam Newton and Odell Beckham and Le'Veon Bell and even Jonathan Stewart laid the smackdown on me. And, you know, I only had my top players actually produced pretty well, but it's just right there in the middle, man. They just didn't do anything for me. And, you know, Ish got a great win. Obviously, he's still in contention for that sixth spot. And now I'm kind of sitting on the outside looking in.
Right. I guess, and I'm not going to lie, it was very surprising because particularly that Arizona-Atlanta game.
Yeah.
Atlanta's, you know, they're without Trufant for the rest of the year because of, I think it was a labrum, if I'm not mistaken, torn labrum.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone knows that when you have a shutdown corner, you rarely throw to that side of the field. This guy is out. You have a second round pick out there that's kind of wavering and teetering in terms of whether or not he's actually in good grace with the coaching staff. Collins goes out there, and I mean, I'm not going to lie. If it's one thing that we haven't really, you know, discussed or really looked at, I think Atlanta's secondary, although very young, I think shows a lot of promise because with their number one guy out, Trufant's going to get his money. You know, he's coming up on the end of his rookie contract. He has a team option, which I know they'll pick up, but they have some young guys that are all under 26. But I was definitely surprised to see them put up the effort that they did and for them to really hold Arizona's offense in check.
Yeah, I think that was a very surprising game. You didn't have the usual suspects really producing. You know, we saw that on the Atlanta side. Obviously, Julio didn't do much or else you probably would have come close to a win. But then you saw on the Arizona side, I think David Johnson, of course, he was his usual studly self, but he actually did sustain an injury, right? He injured his finger or yep. something like that. And he still produced well over 30 points. You had Taylor Gabriel score a couple of touchdowns. I mean, he's been making a lot of plays.
How bad should Cleveland feel for just outright cutting this guy? And but I'll say this, kudos to Atlanta's scouting department to know that once he was cut to go out and get him.
Right, right.
I think that, and there was an article that they had, it creates an interesting situation in terms of Atlanta's receiving core.
Right.
We know that Julio's going to be there. Sanu is this big free agent acquisition who I guess for the most part has done his part. I think he's overpaid for it, but he's done his part. And then this number three receiver spot is one that I think a lot of people are kind of interested in seeing. We thought that Justin Hardy would hold that position down and really kind of solidify himself. But it seems that Taylor Gabriel's come in and has made enough noise to where at least his player option for next year will get picked up. But he is a restricted free agent at the end of the year, and there's been some chatter trying to determine whether or not Atlanta would keep this guy.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think, you know, the most apt comparison I've heard for him within the past couple of days is that he's a better Tavon Austin. You know, he has a similar quickness. He's a similar size, and his routes are somewhat similar as well. But not only can he catch things close to the line of scrimmage, but he can catch the deep ball as well. And he actually specializes in the deep ball. So, yeah, he's a very dynamic player, and I can really see Cleveland kicking themselves for letting him go. Moving on, there were actually three other games that I thought were particularly interesting. You know, I'll allow you to take one and kind of talk about it. But those three were, of course, on Thanksgiving. We had some great games, but, you know, it may be my bias here, but the Washington-Dallas game was particularly interesting. Also on Sunday, we definitely had a barn burner between New Orleans and the Rams, and, you know, we weren't sure what to expect out of Jared Goff, but they ended up scoring some points on the Saints. And then finally, that last game that we had between Denver and Kansas City, I mean, if you were waiting on that, you got a treat.
Yeah, you definitely got a treat out of that one. Surprisingly enough, I want to take on your bias game of Washington and Dallas.
Okay.
And the reason being is because a lot of people, let's be honest, outside of Dallas, I think the next surprise team for everyone in the league would probably be Oakland at 9-2. But look at what Dallas has done this year. You have a rookie running back and a rookie quarterback. Dez was out hurt the first part of the year. Nobody gave Dallas a chance. They were hoping that they would be at least 500 at the time that Romo came back. Jerry Jones got it right. He put those behemoths on that line. He paid them. He made sure that he had quality guys. And that line has, in my opinion, been the reason why they've been able to sustain their success. Now, the games have gotten closer. But you can't deny Dallas's tenacity on offense. And we're not even talking about being overly matched with these teams. They just run it down your throat. And yeah, they don't care how many they don't care how bad you look doing it. They are going to hit you where it hurts, and they're going to keep ramming it. And I mean, I wasn't expecting the game to be as close as it was, but man, Dak Prescott has really impressed me. I truly feel like Romo has played his last game in Dallas, $100 million or not. I think he's done.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with the fact that, you know, Dak is the man from now on. And, you know, if Romo's going to stay in Dallas, it would definitely be as a backup. In terms of the game, I really felt like early on, of course, we were losing for the longest time. But I mean, it became a game, and it was on the back of a heroic effort by Kirk Cousins. I mean, you know, nearly 450 yards, three touchdowns, and, you know, he really kept them in the game. And I would say that the two players that really stood out to me were, of course, DeSean Jackson, who scored a lot of points for me, but then Jordan Reed. I mean, going out of the game with a separated AC joint, coming back into the game on pure adrenaline and scoring a really pivotal touchdown. I think that was a huge performance from him.
It was, but that goes back to kind of what his role was last year, because I remember when I had him on my team, he was putting up wide receiver numbers, man. But when he gets hurt, he gets hurt.
Yeah.
And normally he's out for, you know, chunks at a time, but he really showed some girt this past week, man, and basically was like, I will not be denied what I'm after in this game, which is a victory. And I feel like him coming out kind of gave the team a bit of a second win, because without him, it takes away from the tenacity of that offense. But him coming back out, I think, showed his resiliency, and the team rallied behind him and was like, hey, we're not out of this yet. That game was definitely a lot closer than most people expected.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan Reed came back in, I think, to the detriment of his showing up this week in week 13. He's already been declared out. So it'll be Vernon Davis going up against the Cardinals this week. So moving forward, looking at that Denver-Kansas City game, we had a few really gritty performances, and none better, I think, than Tyreek Hill, the wide receiver for Kansas City, who's really shown in the absence, at least, of Jeremy Maclin. What do you think of Tyreek Hill?
Man, I was definitely surprised by his performance, just because, again, you're talking about looking at everyone's performance, how they've done the entire season. And I honestly think he's one of those guys that you never really expected, but he has really shown up and shown out. I honestly cannot say enough about him. You know, you're talking about someone that you didn't really expect to come in and do well.
Right.
But he really has. I mean, he truly has.
Yes, and on the other side of the ball, we saw a really magnificent connection between Trevor Siemian and Emmanuel Sanders. And Emmanuel Sanders ended up being, you know, one of the top five scorers on the week. What do you think about that connection? You know, obviously Siemian is out for this week. We'll have Paxton Lynch probably starting for Denver. But do you think they're starting to come around offensively?
I think they are. And when you look at this team, think about how well they were rolling last year and the year before. For them to have a 4-2 home record and to be 7-4 overall, I think that they are truly putting themselves in a position to be better as time progresses. We all know what their defense can do. People, you know, want to talk about their defense's lackluster. Last time I checked, when I look at these stats, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, guess who's leading the league in sacks? I'll give you a hint. He wears glasses, and his name is Von Miller, 12 and a half. Yep. This guy is beasting it yet again. But I think that it comes with the territory of the way that team plays. Their defense gives their offense the ability to put up points. With Siemian there, their offense has changed a bit, but I feel like they are finally turning the corner. That cannot be denied based off of their gritty performance this past week.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. So just looking at some individual fantasy performances that were key for teams in the league this week, and, you know, not to continue to puncture the wound that you experienced last week, but Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick, man, at quarterback, he came through huge for your opponent. 36 fantasy points, and on the back of almost 300 yards passing, three passing touchdowns, and then 113 rushing yards.
That's what did it.
Performance.
That's what did it. But this is the old Kaepernick. This is back when he was running that ship in San Francisco, and Frank Gore was their back. And this is the type of performance that he needed. Remember, he lost his job to start the season off, and everybody was wondering, excuse me, what is going on with Kaepernick? Is he still in the league? Is he, you know, like, is he focusing? Is there something going on? And this game right here, I think, is one that really shows what he's capable of when he's focused, has time, and has a belief system behind him. I think he, a lot of people, they thought he fell out of favor. And I think it was just them basically, in my opinion, testing the waters to kind of see if he still had it. You got to remember that this league isn't purely dominated anymore. You know, the days of Tom Brady are coming to an end. And so most teams don't have a flagship quarterback that they know they're riding off into the sunset with. Dallas does. And I believe Oakland does it well in David Carr. But, you know, Kaepernick is one of those guys because he's a little bit older. You know, you start to wonder what he has left in the tank to give. He hasn't suffered any major injuries, but it just seemed like going into camp in the first part of the year by him losing the job, a lot of people wondered whether or not he had anything left. And he came out last week and proved that he is still a quality starter and cannot be ignored in this league still.
Absolutely agree. If we look at the wide receiver ranks, some of the high scorers, and I'm just going to point out a couple that were particularly interesting. Number one, Mike Evans against the Seattle defense absolutely torched them. And if you watched the game, you saw that he was as physical and as dominating as he's ever looked. He is definitely turning into a top three receiver, in my opinion, in the league. And then another receiver, of course, that ended up doing extremely well and has been a pleasant surprise after not doing so well last year is Devontae Adams with Green Bay.
Yes. You know what? And I'll go ahead and take this moment too. Two puncture wounds to me because Devontae Adams traded away. Emmanuel Sanders traded away. It just seems like, you know what, Shane, just get over it. You always give up too soon. I'll tell you somebody who kind of surprised me, and his year has been kind of up and down, but he definitely showed his girth against the Rams, and that would be Michael Thomas.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, Michael Thomas with 10 targets, 9 catches, 108 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Michael Thomas was definitely the safety valve for Drew Brees, as they were in a shootout, it turns out. And, you know, he really produced. I think all year he's been the preferred red zone target for Drew Brees. And, of course, in terms of fantasy usefulness, it makes him extremely useful.
Extremely.
Now, I mean, if we can go to that same game and then look on the other side and see Brandon Cooks with a donut. An absolute donut. What happened there? I mean, you know, we've had sort of the squeaky wheel that's occurring after in Brandon Cooks, you know, talking about him not being involved in the game plan. And do you think you think as a squeaky wheel this week, he'll get the grease?
I'm not sure. And the reason why I say that is because Drew Brees has always been one of those quarterbacks that likes to spread the wealth. He's never been one that gets locked in on a receiver, so to speak. But just to kind of put things in perspective, let's look at what Cook's outputs have been. And I'll just kind of to go from some of his high games. So week one against Oakland, 36.4 points. Week six against Carolina, 36.5. He hasn't had a game in terms of fantasy points over 20. Those are the only two. Now he's come close a couple times because against Kansas City, 18.8. Against Denver, 18.8. But you know, it's kind of interesting how when guys start to say, hey, I'm not involved, usually the following week they come back out and they're deliberately targeted. It might not be the full brunt of targets, but they get looked at a little bit more. I don't think they do that to silence him, but I think they do it in a sense to say, hey, we hear you, but it's about team. And I think a lot of times when these guys start crying about my stats, give me the ball, unless you're a Dez Bryant, Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, I just don't see, or even a Mike Evans, I just don't see you having, in my opinion, the right to say, hey, I just manned the ball. I deserve the ball. Now, if you're torching the defense or if you're being overlooked because the quarterback is locking in on others, that's one thing. But consistency and the hot hand are two things that kind of play into that. Brandon Cooks has been phenomenal, but I think, honestly, Thomas has kind of put himself in a position to supersede him because Thomas has more 20-point fantasy games than Cooks does, which I think is interesting considering no one expected him to be a Drew Brees favorite this early.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. I think, you know, in terms of their value this season and even beyond, I think Michael Thomas is definitely beginning to surpass Brandon Cooks. But let's not forget that Brandon Cooks does have game-breaking ability. So moving on with these duds that we're getting into now, along with Brandon Cooks, there were two other players that were surprising that scored zeros, and then one that only got a single carry but no targets. And the two players that scored zeros were both tight ends. We had Eric Ebron and Antonio Gates. Both scored zero. And then for New York, the Giants, Sterling Shepard only got a single carry for 22 yards. No targets, no catches, no touchdowns, obviously. If we look at Ebron and Antonio Gates, the offensive coordinators have talked a little bit about how they got phased out of the game plan. And then if you look at Sterling Shepard, you had Eli Manning actually coming out and publicly apologizing for not involving him in the game plan. Which of those three do you think was most surprising?
Let's see. If I have to be honest, it's a toss-up for me. I think it's very interesting that Antonio Gates, with the matchup that they had in particular against Houston, that he would put up a dud. I mean, even Hunter Henry, the only reason why he had 10 fantasy points is because he had that shoe-top catch in the end zone. Otherwise, you know, it would have been a very dismal day for a team that is pass heavy. The other surprise for me would definitely be for New York. This team has been a surprise as well in terms of what their record is and how they've been doing. But how do you not get this man involved?
Yeah. I mean, you got coverage on Odell Beckham, and, you know, of course, Odell Beckham did magnificent in this game. But, you know, at some point, it's got to go to your secondary receiver. And you know, I'll be frank, Sterling Shepard is the second receiver there. It's not Victor Cruz. And, you know, if you don't get that guy involved, you're just kind of forcing it to Odell, which doesn't necessarily lead to good results.
No, it doesn't. And if you look at Shepard's production again, just kind of looking over some of his fantasies, his best game was his 22-point production that came against New Orleans in week two. He's another one of those players, though, that I think has been kind of riddled with the up and down. And so he was going up against the Cleveland.
Yeah.
Their second. I mean, it's Cleveland.
A dream matchup, and he couldn't produce.
Yeah. I don't think that that's on him, though. It's not like they threw him the ball and he dropped it or just, I mean, he was just completely forgot about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it goes to show you that, you know, even with that, what ended up being a 2.2-point performance, Ross still got high points. So, you know, kudos to him for having everyone else scoring, even in the absence of Sterling Shepard.
Hey, Ross, you're welcome. Devontae Adams, 31.3 points. You're welcome.
All right. So moving forward, any surprises in game action? So not individual player performances, but anything that stuck out to you in the games themselves?
I actually watched that horrific show that they call a game between Minnesota and Detroit. And I think the one thing that stood out to me is that Detroit needs a bona fide number one.
Yes.
They need somebody that can stretch the field, and they need somebody that can command respect from a team secondary. You know, it's pretty sad when you think about what this team was like when they had Megatron versus what they are now. Matthew Stafford is averaging less than 4.4 yards per pass attempt. I don't know how they won as many games as they have, because you're literally dinking and dunking a team to death. You don't stretch the field, which means if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm licking my chops because I'm putting 8-9 in that box. You're not going to pass. You're not going to throw it past anyone because you don't have anyone that's going to be a deep threat.
Yeah.
And to me, I think that is the saddest thing because of how dynamic that team can be. The other thing really the another one that kind of breaks my heart is Buffalo.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, yeah. They really have nothing. Tyrod Taylor had to do it all against Jacksonville, and they almost lost that damn game.
Yes, they did. I mean, and you saw Blake Bortles kind of boiling his way back, as he always does late in games, all the garbage time stats and everything. But, yeah, I agree. He has a dearth of weapons. And, you know, even in this game, LeSean McCoy went out. And it seemed like, you know, he wasn't going to produce, and he ended up having a great day. But all of that scoring came late for him.
Yep. And that's usually what happens in garbage time when you're trying to catch up. But he can't be ignored. He's definitely a threat. And I think the biggest issue is that they're just not consistent enough. They get so far behind in games at times, they have to literally abandon their game plan and just kind of figure out how to get on the board, points on the board.
Yeah, for me in game action, I think the biggest shock and the biggest thing that we can actually learn from was the Tampa Bay-Seattle game. You know, I felt like it was a really big trap game, and this is something that people could have really seen coming just because you had Seattle coming off an emotional game the previous week and then having to travel all the way to Florida across country, you know, having all these emotions and being tired from traveling and all that stuff. It seemed like a trap game for them, and it turned out to be just that. The Tampa Bay defense looked dominant against them. Russell Wilson couldn't get anything going. None of the offensive pieces, you know, Thomas Rawls was terrible. His receivers weren't great at all. And Tampa Bay really just – they needed to just score 14 points to win that game. And like I mentioned, Mike Evans was the guy who was just being really, really physical with those corners. And Richard Sherman wasn't getting those non-calls that he normally gets. He was actually getting called for holding. Which, you know, is great from a football standpoint. But, you know, you saw that they got hit in the mouth, and they got hit in the mouth hard.
They did. And after they got hit, they folded. They did not put up a fight. And I really think that this goes to show that the Seattle team, although they have some very strong points, they are very vulnerable. We saw it in the Atlanta game because their defense, although it's nice, is not as great as it was before. And they have been exposed, in my opinion, in the Atlanta game because it came down to the last play. Everyone knows that was pass interference. But look how many close games they've had all year. They have not been dominating on either side of the ball and only put up 5 points against Tampa Bay. It says a lot about your team and its ability to be resilient when you are punched in the mouth. Now, do you think – this is an interesting question. Do you think Carroll might be losing his grip with the team some?
I don't think so. I think the playmakers aren't necessarily making the plays that they need to. You know, we've heard about Tyler Lockett and him battling injuries this year. He was supposed to be a really transformative player for that team as they were going to a more pass-heavy approach. You got Thomas Rawls just coming off injury, and unfortunately CJ Procise going out. And, you know, he's still getting his feet wet, and I think this week he'll actually begin to run with the same vigor that we've seen. And it looked like, you know, he was running hard. Of course, he's one of those guys who tries to, you know, he tries to mow over every defender that he comes into contact with. And I just don't think he was necessarily catching his wind in that game. But, you know, for them, I see – this week is being extremely important. Of course, they have Carolina in a down year, but it is the Sunday night game. And so they're going to be showcased after this huge embarrassment against Tampa Bay. And so it'll be interesting to see if they can rebound.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be an interesting game. And it's funny how sometimes the NFL schedule kind of works itself out to give you that game that you know. It's like, hey, if it's one game, it should be by itself for everyone to kind of sit back and see where you stand. This is that game. Now, the question becomes, how would they handle it? We've seen them be resilient before, but, you know, we're not in the first half of the season. We're starting to make that trend towards the back half of playoff pitchers. Divisions are being determined, in my opinion, week in and week out at this point. some very tight races out there. So you really can't afford to have any more mishaps, because you'll mess around and be on the outside looking in.
All right. Well, moving forward, we'll have the weekly recap of the league. And so we'll start out with our high points winner. Ross ended up scoring 182.44 points and beat Roland, the score of 182.44 to 76.04. And Ross was projected to win in that matchup. We then had Simon, Mr. Steal Your Girly, beating Chad Stairway to 7, 120.20 to 95.58. And Chad was actually projected to win that matchup. So an upset for Simon there. We then had Clint versus Brad. Clint, Sandy Ravage, scored 141.94, and Brad, Smoke on the Water, scored 113.38. So Clint got a much-needed win there.
But he wasn't even the projected winner.
Yeah, yeah, Clint was not the projected winner there. It was Brad. And then we had, of course, your matchup. Where JR Nemesis beat you, King of Bench Points, 176.54 to 128.64. Now, JR was projected to win that matchup, so it did go according to the projections.
Yes. A thrashing, nonetheless.
And then the two, well, I'd say the three most anticipated matchups of the week, and I think I'll go in order of their anticipation. Number one was, of course, the number one team versus the number two team. Ronnie actually prevailed over Eric. So Ronnie, the great one, scored 126.9, and Eric, Jacob High Roller, scored 113.3. So yeah, a relatively low scoring game, but Ronnie did prevail in that matchup.
Even though he was the underdog and got some pretty interesting turn of events on both sides. That was definitely one I was paying attention to. Hey, Ronnie, hey, definitely record this, bro, because I'm telling you, nothing like this is going to happen ever again in Extraordinarily Fresh.
And then number two, of course, for fighting for the sixth seed, it was me and Ish, and Ish, the big F Ish, defeated me, Sincere Douche, 133.44 to 118.42. Now, he was also projected to win that matchup, so it did go according to the projections. And then last but not least, the matchup that everyone wanted to go the way that it actually did was Jewel Hostile Takeover defeating AJ, Henri P. McCoy, 164.96 to 117.76, a thrashing, and we all hoped that Jewel would beat the Frenchman, and she came through.
She beat the dog snot out of this man. Now, ironically, AJ left quite a bit of points on the bench. Surprisingly, it still would not have given him a victory.
Well, I mean, I think at this point, you know, everyone was rooting against him. And so, you know, this is sweet joy, you know, sweet vengeance for everyone in the league. And, you know, to now have it down to rivalry week where, you know, AJ and Ish are now fighting for that sixth spot, and AJ has a must win against Eric.
Right.
That's going to be a very interesting matchup.
His team hasn't been, you know, easy to defeat. And again, like we talked about previously, he just has a bunch of – he made all the right picks for high ceiling guys. He truly went out and did that this year, and his team has done that. Yeah, it's a must win. And, I mean, he's already down 20.5 to 4.3. Now, one person can make that up. However, you got to look at these matchups. You got Atlanta at Kansas City, Baltimore, Miami, Indianapolis and the Jets, Buffalo and Oakland, San Diego and Tampa Bay, and we already saw the Dallas-Minnesota fiasco. Then he has Carolina's defense against Seattle. I don't think that's going to be a good move for him, given that Seattle was so outrun last week. I mean, granted, it was only 14 points, but they only put up 5.
Right.
I think that they're going to come out and be very aggressive and we all know Carolina really only has one receiver. Again. No, I'm kidding. No, it's a joke. But, you know, they're kind of one-sided this year, and you know Sherman's going to get the top receiver. So I do feel like that is going to be a key matchup. But I honestly don't see AJ winning this one. I mean, he wasn't projected to win in the beginning, but just given the way that these teams have played and their matchups, I think this is the year that AJ finally gets knocked out.
Yeah, I mean, I see AJ has a shot. Obviously, his wide receivers match up extremely well with Eric's. And I think if he's going to win, it will be those wide receivers that have to produce. So I think, you know, across the board, you know, he has flex, he has wide receiver flexes. And of course, Cole Beasley didn't produce in the Thursday night game. But, you know, if he has Steve Smith have a bounce back game, if Moncrief, you know, continues to be the touchdown monster that he's been, if Brandon Marshall kind of comes back and does some big things, and then Taylor Gabriel, if he continues this run of excellence that he's had, he has a chance.
He does. We all have a chance when the scores are at 000.
Yes, very true. So looking forward into this week and kind of actually analyzing the Week 12 results in the league, of course, we have myself likely getting knocked out of the playoffs. I'm not numerically eliminated, but I think in terms of total points and then the record, even if I was to tie for that sixth seed, I don't necessarily think I could get there. And so realistically, we have a battle now for the sixth seed between AJ and Ish. And, you know, it sounds like you think that Ish is actually going to take it, or at least that AJ will lose this week. Who do you think will take it between those two?
In a surprise, I think it's going to be Ish, as much as I don't want to say it. And here's why. AJ's point total has kind of caught up with him. You know, his argument was that he seems to catch everybody on their best week whenever, you know, he has a matchup. Ish's point discrepancy, in my opinion, is a little worse, but he's been able to catch wins because he's actually upside down. But he's been able to catch some victories. And, I mean, again, AJ is going up against Eric. And, I mean, his team week in and week out has just overproduced. So, at some point, the streak has to end, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But on AJ's side, he has a lot of people that have to come in and overproduce because they're either coming back from injuries or have had, you know, a bad game the week before. So it's, for me, based on the matchups and how things are looking, I give Ish a sneaky insert into the playoffs only because I think AJ loses this week, and that's going to be enough with Ish's win to propel him ahead. Now, points can play a role in it, but if Ish wins and AJ loses, then I think it's clear that Ish will get in.
You know, I'm going to throw a wrench in here. I think, you know, we're kind of discounting Ish's matchup. Of course, he's going up against Nemesis, and, you know, Nemesis did score a lot of points against you last week. But, you know, I think that we're kind of discounting JR's team at this point. Of course, he's already clinched his playoff spot, but I mean, I think he has momentum going into rivalry week, so it won't be necessarily that easy for Ish to win, even though he's projected to win. And so, you know, I think perhaps Ish and AJ lose. And if that's the case, then, you know, I think Jewel has a strong case for the sixth seed if she wins, because she is currently beating AJ in points four. And so, you know, let's say if all three of them end up at 6 and 7, it could be that Jewel gets in up by points.
And that would be a phenomenal thing because, I mean, let's be honest, you know, I invited Jewel into this league. She loves football. She's passionate. But she has been the putrid recipient, seems like, forever. She's been at the bottom of the league since she's come in. So, you know what? I agree with that. I think both Ish and AJ should both catch L's. And Jewel should be able to taste what the playoffs feel like. Because I feel like this is, if there's anybody that deserves to be able to get in there, it's her.
AJ's ruined several chances. He's Mr. Second Place. That should be his real team name because that's where he finishes. He makes his runs. He gets in the playoffs, but he can never seem to get over that hump. And he cost himself that championship last year. So I think that spills over, and he actually misses the playoffs this year.
All right, so I think, you know, focusing on that number six seed is great, but of course there are eight other teams in the league who are kind of just sitting there like, hey, what about me? And, you know, I think we should look at the bottom. And, you know, I think we have a very clear picture about what the putrid playoff may be. And I'm sad to say that, you know, you look like you're going to be in it. unless a few things happen, you know, obviously you can win this week and then I can beat Roland this week and then he ends up in that 13th spot. But if, let's say it is between you and Brad, how do you see that playing out over the next 3 weeks?
You know what? I honestly can't even say because the reason he has one victory this year, it was against me. So I don't like it's pretty scary because it's like, dude, you could actually win the Putrid Trophy this year. It's something that I have avoided my entire time in Extraordinarily Fresh. But hey, at any given moment, you can have that one year that just propels you, whether it's to Putrid or to the championship. I think that my team is better now, just because I think I have some better consistent players. Ultimately, if I look at my team, if I had the same team throughout the entire season, yeah, my record would definitely be different. But like we talked about, they were inconsistent in the beginning. Devontae Adams didn't know what to do. The week he's on the bench, he puts up major points. The week you start him, you know, he's throwing up little coughs. So what do you do? Ultimately, if I do end up in a Putrid game, I'm not getting that trophy. I refuse to get that trophy. Yes, I gave you a victory. You're only one on the season. So if we have to face off each other again, you're definitely catching a loss. I refuse to be Putrid. I'll be a lot of things, but Putrid isn't one of them.
All right, so the last thing for our discussion is kind of looking at the middle here and looking at the race for the Best of the Unfresh Award, which goes to the seventh place finisher. Who do you think is the favorite for that?
Let's see. If I'm looking at this right now, so currently Ish has the number seven spot. But like we said, if they both lose and Jewel catapults into the playoffs, then that would leave AJ at the number seven spot because he has more points. Looking at it, yeah, I'm going to give that to AJ. So you're still going to be, you'll still get a consolation prize, but you'll just be outside looking in. I think AJ will probably end up with that number seven spot.
So you don't think anybody throughout the consolation playoffs can knock him off and, you know, maybe the person in the 10 spot moves up and gets seven at the end of the season?
Surprisingly, you know what? Because I'm looking at these point totals, and Clint could do it, you know, but he has issues on his team with people being out and injured, so maybe he's not the best person. You know what? It could be you, Chris, because you do have a very nice team that is set for the, in my opinion, the long haul. A lot of times, you know, we joked about the decisions that were made to set yourself up for next year. But, I mean, you very well could, in that playoff, run the table.
Yeah, I think it'll actually be fairly interesting to see who gets that because it's not a clear-cut thing. Like, you know, let's say AJ and Ish do lose and, you know, it's like AJ's just going to tear us up in the consolation bracket. I think it'll be pretty competitive.
It will. You know, hell, I might even find a way to sneak in there. No, that's not going to happen this year.
All right, so we're moving on to the waiver wire report. And, of course, there's not much on waivers. It's extremely bare. So what I'm going to do is just kind of go over some of the recent transactions and get your opinion on those. We had a few. Of course, you know, you got Marquise Wilson, which I think was the prize of free agency this week. He actually was very productive last week in the Matt Barkley's first game as a starter, 11 targets, 8 receptions, 125 yards and a touchdown. And actually, he could have done even better. He had a few drops. So I think that's probably the prize of free agency. But then we've got some really sneaky moves here. Eric picked up Jonathan Williams, Buffalo's running back. Of course, the backup to LeSean McCoy last week when Mike Gillisley was out, but it looks like Gillisley will play. He got Carson Wentz, Philadelphia quarterback, so he's stocking up on quarterbacks there. AJ actually fell for the recency bias, and he went and got Jermaine Gresham, the Arizona tight end that did well against Atlanta. And then Ronnie made a sort of speculation move by picking up Christian Michael. Out of those, who do you think was a good pickup? Who's a bad pickup? What do you think of those?
I'm going to give Ronnie the bad pickup. And here's why. Christian Michael, as we all know, we see what he did when he was in Seattle. And he fell out of favor with them. It's not the first time it happened. But given Green Bay's running back situation, it is very, very possible that he could do something. However, given his lack of in Seattle, I just don't see him being able to put forth any kind of effort that would suffice anything other than being on the roster to help for depth. I just have to call it like I see it. I just don't see that being anything more than a depth move for him being in Green Bay.
You know, I think this is sort of the extreme case of what people do recommend you do later in the season, and that is handcuffing your starters. And in his case, he has James Starks, and so, you know, he's getting who would be, I guess, the quote-unquote backup to James Starks, although I actually tend to think it's Ty Montgomery that would get the most work if James Starks went out. But, you know, this league is so deep that, you know, the handcuffs – the bona fide handcuffs have been taken all season, and you kind of got to go for the scrap heap, realistically.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I honestly would have to say one of the better pickups I would say would be mine with Marquise Wilson. Definitely could have had a much bigger game last week, but you're talking about 29.5 fantasy points that he put up, and it could have been bigger. So, you know, you have San Francisco, Detroit, Green Bay, and Washington to round out the season for him. And given what he's done with the other injuries, Chicago's in trouble. I think they've kind of thrown in the white flag for the year. But I think this helps them kind of see what they have in potential sneak picks because, you know, Kevin White's out for the year. So, you know, they got to figure some things out. What better time to do it now so that way going into the draft and offseason targets, you kind of can get your list together. But I think that he has the potential to have another big game, and he'll definitely be targeted. So hopefully his concentration will be on point and he can put up points. Those are the two. I think AJ was just drinking the Kool-Aid because he needed a tight end. And because, you know, he had one good game, of course, he's running to get him. Like, yes, that's my guy, that's my guy. But ultimately, I think that's gonna hurt him. I don't see that consistency being there.
All right, moving on. We have my report, the commission's report for the week 13 regular season finale power rankings. So this will be the last podcast that features power rankings. I know the league is happy about that.
They're all trash. They're all trash. Solely because I've been at the bottom all year. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you've moved up. You've moved up and then you moved back down. You know, everyone's kind of fluctuated throughout. And I think the only people who have been consistently at the top, actually, I think the only person, actually two, I think Ross and Ronnie have consistently been near the top. But everyone else has fluctuated quite a bit throughout the power rankings. But anyway,
Barry gets no love.
the finale power rankings, of course, last week I had Eric ranked above Ronnie, but of course Ronnie came back, won this matchup, so he goes back to number one. So we have one and two is Ronnie and then Eric. Then we have three and four is Ross and Simon, just as they were last week. And then similar to last week, we have JR and AJ at five and six. Now, at seven is where it starts to get a little jumbled up, and the results of this past week did affect these rankings. So at seven and eight, I have Ish and I have Jewel. And sort of my line in the sand of sorts is at that eight spot. Those are the teams that I think have the opportunity to make the playoffs. Then at 9 and 10, we have myself and then Clint. And then at number 11, we have Chad. At number 12, I have you. And then number 13 is Roland. And, of course, number 14 at 1 and 11 is Brad. That's the power rankings. Any thoughts on that?
No, I think that the final power rankings kind of reflect what this season has been for a lot of us. I think that it kind of gives you the playoff picture, but then also that consolation bracket as well. Let's see if these teams can produce and make these rankings to be as close to accurate as possible. These weeks, this entire season has just been wacky across the board, man. It's like you can't find one week where everything has gone according to plan. There's always some kind of injury or an overachiever, and it's been wacky, man, this entire year, and just the things that we've had happen, a team sitting with two losses, and, you know, when was the last time that happened? Again, I ask this every time I'm on here because it's so rare that we really need to truly enjoy it, because I don't think we're going to see it again.
Yeah, I do think this is an anomaly of a season with such clustering in the middle, but then, you know, such disparities on the edges there. It's really interesting to see. And I think it's a very interesting case study just in general for the league history. So I'll have fun with that this offseason for sure.
So basically what you're saying is that the 2016 Extraordinarily Fresh season is going to have a big fat asterisk next to it. Cool.
No asterisk. Come on, man. You know, what could end up happening is one of those 8-4 teams gets hot in the playoffs and they end up winning the championship. You know, things like this do happen in our league. So, you know, we're no strangers to that.
This is true. But again, just having the way that the league looks, definitely want to go back to, say, post-draft, to those rankings and see what they are at the season finale. And see how accurate those projections were. Hey, maybe that's something we could look at doing. Maybe is for the post draft power rankings, have season projections, and see how accurate we are.
No, man, you're just putting more things on my plate. Thanks, Shane. I appreciate that.
I do what I can. Better coming from me than AJ.
Well, you know, I will say for everyone who's listening in the league. I'm not sure if you've noticed, but when I post the power rankings, I do post something right after that, which shows the points and the earnings. So you'll go to the league website and the earnings report is there. It'll show how much money everyone has earned to that point in the season. But then the thing that's really cool and that I think you should explore is the points, a spreadsheet that's hosted by Google Docs. And if you go there, what you'll see is you'll see two tabs. One will see the accumulation of points over the weeks, and then your relative point standing, your standing in the league, and then your standing in the power rankings. But then on the next tab, on the second tab, what you'll see is the power rankings, and the teams are color-coded, so you can actually follow the colors to see how they moved throughout the weeks, which I think is a really cool feature. So definitely, if you haven't checked that out, go ahead and check it out.
Don't worry, I'm consistently 12 or lower. It's okay.
All right, so moving forward, we have our Smack Talk session. And we have, of course, the venerable Ross with his second High Points win.
Well, first, I'd like to say that I told you all I'd be back on the podcast for High Points very soon. You've all trashed my team, but I'm I'm victorious now. I got a great performance from Tom Brady. My wide receivers were very solid. Overall, it was what I expected my team to do. You have a great team, but my team is now starting to overcome their early season struggles.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
I said that my team was great when the season started. They're now showing it. Yeah, it's rough to listen to the podcast and hear you all talk so much trash about my team. I'm not able to respond, so I've got to work harder, get high points, come on, defend my team. We got high points yet again, and I don't see this becoming a one-time thing. I'll be back on here sooner than later. I believe that it was Clint and AJ and maybe Brad who are completely trashing my team, so I won't shout you guys. I don't know. It's a mixture of fucking skill. It's skill when you win, and it's luck when you lose.
Pretty much. There you go. That's how you describe it.
Yeah. It's good to have something to, connect you to people that aren't necessarily, that you aren't able to see on a regular basis. Right. That's something to kind of, it's like if you go and play golf with people or something, I guess. I don't do that either, but.
I used to do that when I was in Philadelphia. I haven't done it since I've been here, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You used to.
Yeah, yeah. So one of my best friends, actually, who was in medical school at Penn, he played golf basically every weekend. And we always used to go out to the municipal courses, actually. So we didn't even have to go to the country clubs. There are actually 7 municipal courses around the city. And so we were able to go and pay a small fee to do 9 or 18 holes.
Yep. Yeah. Nice. That's great. I was actually talking. I went did a 45-50 mile bike ride this morning, which ended up being a little bit more than I'd bargained for.
Oh yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, it was ambitious. But we got on the subject of golf. I was like, I don't really know anything.
I don't know. I think the common conception is that once you start doing golf, you're kind of old.
Yeah, there's that. It's kind of, I don't know, it's like my I had a teacher in high school, actually, I'll never forget. He used to say, he's like, if you want to be successful, learn how to play golf.
Yeah, I mean, it has some truth to it, definitely.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, it's what you start to do a little bit more as you. Yeah, because you can talk and whatnot.
Right. Yeah, a lot of deals are made on the golf course. People say that, and, you sometimes don't believe it, but I've actually seen it done. So it actually is true.
Yeah, no, I know. I have an uncle who plays all the time, and I know, the guy I'm working for right now, I think he actually might be a pretty good golfer. I have to figure this out, but... He always kind of, lets it slip, oh, he's playing this tournament this weekend or whatever. And I don't know enough to, know if what he's doing is impressive or not, but I have a feeling that he's, probably actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, those guys who kind of talk about it, but they don't talk about it too much,
exactly.
Probably pretty good.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they don't overdo it, but they, yeah.
They at least let you know that they participate.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't let you know.
It's a hobby.
Yeah, exactly. They don't brag about it, but they let you know a little bit.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, thanks again for taking your time out of your schedule for us.
No problem. You guys know that I'm really busy, and I appreciate the opportunity to come on. I always appreciate the opportunity to come on the podcast. I respect you all, but I hate you all too. It is truly my goal to beat every single one of you, even though I'm busy. I make it a point to keep tabs on everything here. I've really enjoyed this year. I've really enjoyed winning. We'll have to see how things continue to progress as the season goes along. I'm really looking forward to our matchups, always. He's a jerk and I hate him, and that's all.
Ross makes me sick, by the way. I just want to point that out.
All right, moving forward, we have our matchups for this week, Rivalry Week. We've already seen these matchups before, but, they do carry a little more muster this week just because we got a couple of teams really fighting for the playoffs. So first, we have Jewel against Brad. And Jewel is actually projected to win this week. We then have you, Shane, versus Clint, and Clint is projected to win.
Clint makes me sick too.
We have Simon, Mr. Steal Your Girlie, versus Ross, the Fresh Crew. Simon is actually projected to win, to the surprise of a lot of people. And yeah, we'll see how this works.
Yeah, that's definitely a shocker for me. But you know, we'll see what happens.
And then, of course, we have the longstanding rivalry of Chad, Stairway to Seven, versus Ronnie, the Great One. Chad actually started out and was projected to win, but after the Thursday night game, he's now projected to lose by 0.07 points. So that was,
you know, I was going to say, this is probably, if I had to peg it, my matchup of the week, just because of the projections initially and how tight that is. Because outside of that, the only other matchup that even is remotely close is Ish and JR.
Well, speaking of them, that's one of the playoff determining matchups. We have Ish and JR. Ish the big F Ish, and then JR, of course, you know, he's taking the name of his opponent, and then Nemesis. And of course, you know, peep it out if you haven't seen it. He has a dead fish as his avatar, which is actually pretty funny. And at this point, Ish is projected to win. And he's projected to win by only about 3 points or so. So that should be interesting to watch. And then, of course, the other playoff determining matchup is Eric versus AJ. And we mentioned before that Eric is projected to win by a lot in that matchup.
A lot.
But that is not the highest projected win total, because the highest projected win total actually comes between me and Roland. I'm projected to beat him by about 70 points. So I think my team, in its perennial underperformance, will actually will not hit that 70-point mark. And, you know, I may only win by like 5 or so. We'll see.
Yeah, your team's let you down.
All right, so just looking forward, of course, we have the two playoff determining matchups, and, you know, those are the really important ones. But, of course, because this is rivalry week, we have some longstanding rivalries in there. Of course, you know, you've expressed your hatred for Clint in the past, and so, you know, I know you're gunning for him this week.
Yeah, I'm definitely trying to embarrass him. Like, you know, yeah, my team's pretty much been taking Mike Tyson uppercuts to the chin all season, but we're not at the 14th mark yet, so we're still standing. Clint, here's a message for you. I know that we haven't known each other long, but know this. I despise of you. You're working on your way of being in that same category with JRD and Ross when it comes to me. Don't get to that level. You never recuperate from that level.
And then we have, of course, there's a pretty heated rivalry between JR and Ish. And, of course, because it's playoff implications, JR, I think, you know, he'll probably try his best to beat Ish. And then, of course, Eric and AJ, AJ with all his antics, and Eric is pretty outspoken about AJ's antics. And so it'll be interesting.
Yes.
It'd be interesting if Eric does pull out this victory against AJ, how he's going to gloat about it. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that.
Definitely should shut him down if that's the case, for sure.
And then the rivalry between Ross and Simon, I think, has been civil. But, of course, if Ross does beat Simon, I think there'll be a little bit of gloating there. There has to be, because this has seeding implications in the playoffs. So I think they can switch teams.
Yes, very much so. But then you have to remember, I have to give Ross credit, unfortunately. I can't believe I'm doing this. Ross has been eerily quiet, but he has put together a solid season. Simon has been doing a lot of talking, and he hasn't been able to back up all his talk. So, Ross, as much as I hate you, get this victory. You have two key parts on your team from me. Don't let me down.
All right, and just as a reminder for everyone, there are some prizes associated with this week. Again, the High Points prize is $45, so it's not the normal $10. So you can definitely recoup some money this week by getting High Points. And then every winner of the Rivalry Week matchup will receive 10 bonus points, and so that can have some implications in the points race.
Man, extraordinarily fresh. Week 13, rivalry week. Who's going to stand tall and who's going to get knocked on their ass? This is going to be interesting.
A fitting end to the podcast there, Shane. I appreciate that synopsis of the week.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what this season's been. The teams that are unexpectedly doing well, and then you have others that just leave you scratching your head week in and week out, King of Bench Points. But, it happens, but this is why we put the teams together. This is why we put the rosters out there. This is why they play every week. So, good luck to those that are projected to win. Let's see what happens because, hey, this is your fantasy history on the line here. Are you going to be a part of someone that made it? Or are you going to be the laughing stock? It's huge, myself included. So this is going to be an interesting week, man. I mean, we say that every week because we never know what the hell is going to happen. But it's rivalry week, so you cannot expect anything less than greatness.
All right, I thank everyone for tuning in, and of course, I thank my pal Shane for coming on and co-hosting with me. It's been a great time. It's been very fun, and I'll just say next week, look out for a new format for the podcast. Of course, we'll have the playoff preview, and we won't have the smack talk session. We just got a lot to get through, but of course, tune in and hear all the smack talk being talked by the host and the co-host. And hopefully our playoff preview podcast will be an extremely fun time and you guys will enjoy it.
Definitely looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on, as always, Chris. To everyone in the league, put up or go home. This is big. Let's see how you show up.
All right, signing off for week 13. We'll see you in week 14. Stay fresh, guys.